With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
VAR's reign of terror is over, and we have delicious helpings of real-life football for you. Just 3 days before the Community Shield, you're listening to The Football Ramble. It's Wednesday, 4th of August. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
So we're going to do our vocal warm-ups today as a part of the episode, I reckon, because as we know, Luke Moore's just been sitting very quietly talking to only himself in his head. Is that right, Luke?
There's no change there. It's just sometimes I do that on my own. Sometimes I do that in the studio. I don't think anyone listens. I just do it. And it's so far so good.
So I thought we could go into our round of Three Lions, you know, just for the listeners.
Where's that come from? Listen, you're in the transition period now.
Yeah.
You're in what Jim would call the football season perineum. And you're going to have to make the transition between international football and club football as smoothly as possible. So we can't be going back regressing into Three Lions chat.
You know. Because that'll be here again before you know it in November. So you don't want to leave that well alone so it feels new again when you hear it the first time.
Right.
I heard that in the current negotiations that Harry Kane's in at Spurs with his brother, I heard that when there was a little bit of a lull in the conversation, Charlie Kane didn't know what to say, so he just started going, "It's coming home, it's coming home. Come on, everybody!" Yeah. And tried to heal some rifts, but it didn't work.
And then Harry's going, no, Charlie, the thing, I want to leave. I don't want to come home. That's exactly the problem here.
Yeah. What Charlie advised Harry to do was to go into the meeting with just dressed in his full England kit with the captain's armband on. He said that they'll definitely respect you if you do that and it'll all be fine.
Given, Luke, that you clearly have such extraordinary insight into player negotiations at Tottenham, I'm actually feeling a bit pissed off you don't bring this kind of cultural understanding more deeply into the ramble normally.
I know that to be a fact. I've got it on good authority. Hashtag here we go. Hashtag please subscribe to The Athletic.
We carry all sorts of ads these days, don't we, lads? Yeah. Let's talk then about this VAR. They fixed it. And that's the really important thing we want to get across in the run-up to the new season. As the two of you said, we've got to leave international football behind, where VAR seemed to be actually, on balance, I think we could all agree, comparatively quite good. Certainly,
they knew how to work it.
Yeah, certainly in relation to the Premier League. It felt like it was timely. You know, still some mistakes, some questions up for grabs. But ultimately, it didn't feel like it was charging into view every fucking game just to like piss everyone off and be inept. So anyway, that's that. We've left that behind. We're now going to have perfect VAR in the Premier League. We understand, or we've been told, that the use of VAR will be, quote, dialed back, and it's not going to be used to penalise trivial things. Now, the argument you could make is that all things in football are fundamentally trivial, Luke, but I'm not necessarily going to go down
that. It's my career you're talking about.
Am I?
Talking about trivial things?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Do you want to hear the criteria that they're changing? You can say no if you want.
Do you want me to honestly answer that?
Yeah, no. Jim, do you want to hear the criteria?
Yeah, go on. I have to say, when you see them talking about things being dialed back, I was like, they're not putting this on dial-up, are they? They're not making it more like, they're trying to streamline it by making it a bit more old school and even less reliable.
56K.
Yeah, but please do tell us the new criteria so we can kind of pinpoint exactly how they'll mess this up as well.
Well, what it sounds like is that they've spoken to some proper football men, and so they're putting proper football chat into it about proper fouls. But the main thing that is seeming to be focused on is spot kicks, I guess, because those are the sort of things that people get the most agitated about. So they're sort of playing to the gallery already, which in my view seems like a bit of an odd thing to do. So the three criteria for awarding a spot kick are the degree of contact experienced by the attacking player, then the consequence of that contact, and finally the motivation of the attacker in reacting to the challenge. So they're going to be interpreting motivation.
It's a lot of work, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
In a split second.
But they're very skillful, so it'll be fine.
I mean, I would favour the idea... Sorry, Jim, I'd favour the idea of watch it happen and decide whether it's a foul or not.
Right.
And if it is a foul, give a penalty. If it's not a foul, don't give a penalty. Because to me, it feels like I've bought a kitchen gadget that I don't really know how to work, and it sits in my kitchen side, never being used. Mm. And I think about fixing it, and what's ever just happened is someone's just whacked a lot of gaffer tape around it, and it's still the same thing that I have no understanding of how it works or what it's even for. And it's quote-unquote improved. When it's not improved, it's just been made more complicated. They don't need to do it. They don't need to make it more complicated. They need to just basically decide whether is that challenge a foul anywhere else on the pitch. If it is, give a penalty. If it isn't, don't. What you're doing is giving people a load more things to think about, which is clearly, by definition, going to make everything more complicated. I don't know how you feel, Jim, but that's what it feels like to me.
Well, I think this is perhaps, or the intention of it, is a step in the direction of trying to make that happen, isn't it? Because Mike Riley says contact on its own is only part of what referees should look for. They should also ask themselves if contact has a consequence. It's not sufficient just to say, and this I think is the important bit, it's not sufficient just to say, yes, there's contact. I think partly we got into that frame of mind by the forensic analysis that went into VAR awards. And I think that's right. That whole, I think that kind of dovetails with what you're saying, Luke. Suddenly, for some reason, the players get into the box and no one can tell what a foul is anymore. It's like, oh, well, there was contact.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just needs to be treated as it is elsewhere on the pitch. And I think this is a step in the right direction of trying to solve that, but essentially by giving the referees a series of riddles to solve every time they look at a challenge.
One VAR official can only tell the truth and the other one can only lie. And you've got to work out which one is to pass and get the penalty. And if you don't, you fall into the bog of eternal stench. I think it's... What to me is the red flag in all of this, you know, aside from that, you know, pushing that painful analogy I used earlier to one side, is that Mike Rowley's talking about forensic analysis that has gone into VAR in the past, right? And how that's not helpful. Well, you've introduced like 5 million cameras to look at incidents individually in real time. And so how on earth are you going to square the circle of saying, here's all this equipment to make the analysis forensic, and then say, but we're not going to use it forensically. Well, then what are you using it for? You know, you either need to massively amend the laws of the game to accommodate this new technology, or you really just need to admit that you made a mistake and it's gone too far, and that we need to go back to basics. And I think this is kind of half-assed attempt to go half back to basics, but add a load more detail on top to make it, you know, apparently easier for referees. It's not going to make it easier. It's going to make it harder for them. And it's also going to make it more complicated. And I thought that, correct me if I'm wrong here, you guys, but I thought that one of the reasons that it apparently worked so well in the Euros, and if we go back a bit further in the World Cup a few years before, is because the amount of staff being used on it was higher. And I'm pretty sure the Premier League said they aren't going to do that. And the reason it's taken so long is because I haven't got as many staff looking at different things. So I don't see how that's going to amend one of the biggest bugbears that football fans have about it, which is that it takes too long. And this ultimately doesn't get you to the right decision anyway. Sorry, Jim. One final thing. There are certain things in football laws that will always be open to interpretation because of how the laws are written. Yes. You're not going to change that unless you change how the laws are written. They're not definitive. A lot of it's down to referee interpretation. A lot of leagues around Europe, for example, are refereed differently from country to country. You can't put something and layer it over the top and say this is going to fix everything, because it won't.
What I find really frustrating about it is that for the Premier League to just get more staff is very, very straightforward, surely. Even if it means training more people, like they have the budget to do that. There's, you know, money is essentially no object. And it goes back to this sort of arrogance that we've seen from the English institutions quite a lot, that like we have an example of how to do it properly. And rather than just do that, they've like, oh, we'll do our own sort of workaround. Like there is a perfect blueprint, perfect template there. Just do that. Just do that. Just do the same thing.
I don't know how you feel about this, Kate, because you are traditionally much more intelligent than me, so you probably understand this better than me. But I don't understand also the explanation that's been given around offsides as well. Like they're saying that they're going to thicken the lines and they're going to not be as forensic with it and stuff.
Yeah,
but clearly they've let the genie out the bottle with that now, right? Because last season it was offside, and now apparently assistant referees are being told to flag straight away, which goes against the whole point of it. Because if the assistant referee makes a wrong decision, then the game presumably stops, or the players at least stop because they see the flag go up. If it turns out they weren't offside, are they going to continue? It's just all very, very complicated.
And you remember when I talked to Sean Massey, she was saying about how they've had to change the way they referee. You know, they had to think about it instead of instinctively going, that's offside. They had been told to re-referee or to be slower effectively so that they could wait for the VAR to happen. But the point you make about offside generally, Luke, and this is something that I think a lot of clarity has been lost, ironically enough, in amongst all of this, is that offside, the idea is that it's either offside or not. That's not a debate. Whereas these other things that we're talking about are more like referees call, whether it's the VAR or whether it's the on-field referee. The point about offside is it's supposed to be, you know, it's just a line. This is not subjective. Here's the line. If we're on or if we're off, then that's, you know, you may not agree. There may be this question about, but the problem is with the forensic analysis is the question about pixels, you know, like because the cameras that they're using.
Frame rates as well.
Exactly, frame rates. And you know, when you're getting into frame rates, you're a bit screwed. So I actually think the use of the lines, the thicker lines, that actually does serve some purpose, partly to just still debate a little bit in the people watching the games, right, Jim? Because if you don't need to see this in tiny little line that ultimately may not be correct at the moment the ball was actually struck, because the cameras that VAR are using are not the same quality as the, whatever it's called now, ultra high, super flying definition thing that you have on your actual telly.
Yeah. Apparently it was used in the Netherlands. They brought in the thicker lines themselves because they found it really annoying, the sort of armpits being offsides and stuff. So we're just like, oh, forget this. We'll just do it our own way. And apparently that worked really well. And apparently, is it 20 goals that Mike Rowley said? Would from last season
is the toenails thing
would not have been chalked off. And I think, like, when you actually take a step back from that, that is absolutely scandalous when you look at how poorly VAR has been implemented in the past season. 20 goals, the entire point of the sport really, were chalked off. I mean, that would I don't have what goals they are in front of me, or, and I haven't done the maths on the points tallies, but that the table would surely have looked different in some way, even if an insignificant way, to some clubs.
I will suggest one final thing before we move on, which is just that perhaps with offside, and they can't really do that now because, as I've said, the genie's out the bottle. Perhaps with offside, bearing in mind regular football watchers, both in stadium and on TV, have kind of been used to it not being over-analysed, because obviously VAR didn't exist until a couple of years ago. Perhaps just don't show the replay. Perhaps just say, we're checking it, offside. We're checking it, goal stands. Because barring the tin four hat brigade,
well, that's what
you
I was
get on
say.
The internet anyway, yeah. He's going to scream conspiracy about anything, whatever happens. You might just save yourself a little bit of flack, and the optics would be a lot better. But they can't really do that now. So
then
they have
people
to do
will know
different.
That it's being controlled by Stockley Park. People will know for sure.
Oh, Stockley Park's an anagram for devil loves rugby. And yeah. So, you know.
But I think they are doing that, aren't they? Isn't it the case that they're not going to be showing the replays as much? I think potentially in the past season or past few seasons, they actually just wanted to try and make some drama out of it, which just ended up pissing everybody off.
So well, the Americans I think it's liked probably... it, didn't they? In MLS, it all was lively. Ooh, go to the screen. Here's a cheerleader. That's how it was. Yeah, look, there's some Champions League qualifiers last night. And they were all right, actually. Rangers lost their first leg of their Champions League qualifier 2-1 away at Malmo. Rangers were 2-0 down until Stephen Davis's deflected strike from the edge of the box in the 95th minute. How good was that? Just the 36 years old, Jim. Oh, yep. Man, they looked ecstatic. I know, obviously, they still lost the first leg. But as Steven Gerrard pointed out, and you really can't argue with this, going into the second leg 2-1 down is better than going in 2-0 down.
Good to get confirmation.
Yeah.
Absolutely great to get confirmation. That
wasted as a manager, should be
is
a pundit.
No, his record in these European qualifiers is decent, old Steven Gerrard. And I think the commentator was saying last night was perhaps the first one he's lost. I hope I haven't got that wrong. And, you know, joking aside, it is huge for them because, you know, Malmo are in the middle of their season. Let's not forget. I mean, their season runs from May through to December. So they're probably up and running and feel like they're fully up to speed. So it's a big ask for Rangers. But it's kind of weird because the first half was really even. And the second half, they just got caught out straight away at the start of the second half. Not once, but twice. And then they had to kind of battle their way back into it. But it's absolutely right. I think what Steven Gerrard was supposed to say, and I did watch the post-match interview, I think what he meant was that, because he kept referring to the fact that something massive here has happened at the end of this game. Something huge has gone on. There's a big event at the end of this game, which means a lot for us. And that, you know, so what he's talking about is that, look, we're still alive and kicking in this, and we've got a chance now. And so I do think it was a really important goal for obvious reasons. Stephen Davis just swinging his 36-year-old leg at it and getting a goal. It's great to see. He played last time Rangers played Malmo, I think, which was 10 years ago. He was playing then as well. So wow. Great to see. It was actually great to watch some actual football, like some club football, because shaking off that international tournament hangover takes ages.
Yeah.
You still wake up with, you know, that fucking Atomic Kitten song in your head every morning for about 2 weeks after
yeah.
particularly when England get to a final. So,
do you remember waking up the morning after the final with three lines in my head felt like torture?
Why are you doing this? Let's focus. Let's focus our attention. Like they say with mindfulness, we've got to be in this moment. Yeah, Sorix and Veliko Bemancevic scoring two great goals in this one, actually, I thought. Quite enjoyable to the point about club football. And yeah, all right, I'm taking the piss out of Steven Gerrard, which I really shouldn't do. It's a good point. I think Rangers, one of my friends who's a Rangers fan, said that, you know, they do actually feel confident going into the second leg here.
Well, they should do, because Gerrard's record at Rangers has been great. I mean, you know, we take the piss out of him if all you like. I mean, he's still a young manager. He's only just 41. He's done a great job as far as Rangers are concerned, and I'm sure with respect to them, he'll go on to do even better things if based on what we've seen so far. Celtic's result against Midtjylland doesn't look so good, because Midtjylland got absolutely battered last night. By PSV, it was and that Jim that goal celebration you were talking to me about earlier was amazing, wasn't it?
Yes, Yeah, it's I forget the player's name, the first player that scored for PSV, but he basically leapt over the advertising hoardings and just like he clearly didn't think about a landing at all because he just absolutely stacked it. But he did that thing where, like, and as a man who's fallen over many times in his life, I'm familiar with this. You just get straight back up. You just get straight back up like it didn't happen.
There was also some great names on display last night in the games. I mean, you wanted to talk about who was the player you wanted to talk about, Kate?
No, I did. Well, I was told that the player was called Innocent Bonky, but actually. it's actually Bonk. I don't actually know how to pronounce his first name, unfortunately, but it's the other way around. Bonker Innocent, maybe.
You say you were told this. You sent several WhatsApp messages about it to no response, but continue to do so. You were all in on Bonky Innocent for sure.
As a point, yeah, Dexter or whatever it is, I often find that my messages go unreplied, so I don't really. I didn't really notice, to be honest. Gerard was saying that Rangers had six or seven players who needed to improve for the next game, which I think is probably fair enough, given that James Tavernier basically gifted Anders Christensen the ball for the second goal, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But, hey, honourable mention to Conor Goldson, who effectively kind of set up the Rangers goal with a head like a traction engine. Hope he likes that.
Can we also have an honourable mention for Fashion Sakala?
Junior Fashion Sakala. Yeah, it sounds like Junior Fashion Sakala sounds like a kind of charity event for young designers in East London. As Jim says, to have Fashion Junior on your back is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Great,
huge
to see.
Move.
Yeah, so ultimately a sort of neutral, let's say, result for Rangers, showing their power. At the end there, and we're going to get to a break now and tell you about a bit of Olympics football after this and some news about Lukaku.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Join me, Jaguar, the host of BBC Introducing Dance on Radio 1, for my brand new podcast, Utopia Talks. It's a reactive platform to discuss issues that my generation care about in dance music culture and the wider world. I'll be talking to some of the biggest names in dance music, including people like Heidi.
The lineups do not need to be 99% male-driven. Mm. There's all these interesting new producers and women that are coming through, you know, all sorts. Yeah. It's like women are speaking out now.
And the sensational Bless Madonna.
I feel like literally my entire life has led up to this. This is the first event we've had like this, not just in the UK, but really in the Western Hemisphere. And to be able to be here with all of these people who are so happy is just absolutely the biggest, highest joy of my life.
As well as having the meaty conversations I often have with friends that I'd love you to join in with.
There's so much new energy coming out of the pandemic, and there's so many like new nights and festivals, and everyone's really pushing for this new structure where people genuinely don't feel anxious about coming to a club night because of the way they look or the way they dress. It's more about everyone in.
To me, Utopia is a perfect moment. It's togetherness, it's the future. I want to live in a more inclusive, equal world, and I hope this podcast will build a community and help create change. Subscribe now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. New episodes dropping every Wednesday. Welcome to Utopia Talks.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Danny Welbeck, and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
All right, welcome back to the Football Ramble. Me and Luke and Jim in your ears today. And now it's time for a few of these.
So Chris Brooking has been in touch and he has a little bit of a conundrum that he needs help with from both ourselves and from you, our dear listeners. Chris says, me and my 8-year-old son are Villa fans and ever since the Euros, he's wanted a home and away strip with a number 7 and, you guessed it, Grealish on the back. Despite trying to break it to him casually, he's still absolutely determined. Clearly, getting the kit is a gamble and really, it's high time he learned about football's economic inequality and that it is very likely that an Abu Dhabi-backed super club is about to scoop up his idol for their subs bench. On the other hand, do I want to corrupt his pure perspective of the beautiful game? Do I preserve that and just take the financial hit? Or do I show him the facts, give him an Ashley Young shirt and tell him a pigeon will shit in his mouth if he doesn't take it on the chin?
Don't tell him. How old is this kid? Don't tell
eight.
Him that.
Eight.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness me. I'm torn here because, I mean, first of all, I'm pleased that Chris Brooking's got to the stage of his life where he feels like he needs to ask us for advice about his own kid. But,
yeah, more of that.
But I feel like it is a kind of rite of passage that you're a player you like from your club will leave. And I don't necessarily think, in essence, that is to do with modern football that much. Now, I understand the problems with, you know, this kind of unlimited funds that these certain clubs have, particularly when COVID has relaxed these financial fair play rules. But ultimately, I mean, I grew up supporting Portsmouth, as you all know, and players leave all the time. You know, I remember Darren Anderson being my favourite player in like the early 90s, and he was brilliant, and then he went off to Spurs. And it was like, well, unfortunately, that's just part of the pecking order. So I think I probably would get him the shirt with Grealish on the back, and I think I would sit down with him, even when Grealish leaves, and say, look, this is kind of how it works sometimes, particularly when you support Villa. But the good news is, you know, you support your local team, you know, there's a lot more to it than just one player. And it's all about the club and about the fans and about the camaraderie and the community and all the rest of it. Now, I understand it might be a bit of an overload for an 8-year-old, and I do respect the fact that the time might be a problem because he might literally leave the day after or something. But I think it's the only way you can go about it, I think.
I disagree. I think you cannot get that shirt because either he won't wear it because it'll be too sad, right? So it's sort of pointless. Or if he goes around wearing it, it'll be a laughing stock at school. Do you remember what
people
school
will
was
be
like?
Mean to him.
People will be, you'll be getting called a Poindexter left, right, and centre. You'll be getting crushed. You can't invite that into his life. And I say this as a young man who grew up in Essex with a goalkeeper's shirt with semen on the back. I learned very quickly that these things can go awry.
Oh, no. I thought we were building into this whole principle that I've been working on a bit, and we've talked about a bit about football when you're a kid teaching you life lessons, right? You know, learning about loss and, I mean, by extension, death, but you get what I mean.
And flags.
I think
you know where flags are from.
Yeah, I mean, that's a slightly less deep version of it, I guess, Jim. But exactly. So I think Luke is leaning towards that with his whole analysis about it. And I suppose I'd tie the two of these answers together, right, you guys? And I'd say, yeah, probably don't get the shirt, but have the conversation. Although in a way that means your eight-year-old loses twice, doesn't it?
To me, it just felt like a whole coded message from a listener to us saying that I don't really want to set fire to £60. Can you just tell me that I shouldn't?
That's a great point. Yeah, mate. You, Chris, you don't have to spend your money on anything, really. Maybe I know what he should do. Spend your afternoon drawing a lovely picture of Jack Grealish with your son, and that'll be a life lesson and a beautiful moment that he'll remember forever.
Or why don't you both just agree between you to start supporting Man City?
Yeah, that's a great point. He's young enough that it's probably fine.
We should also clarify, like, you do need to spend some money, Chris. Do continue to clothe and feed your child.
Or use it on the Patreon subscription to The Ramble.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I certainly didn't expect The Ramble to be answering these kind of parenting-based questions, guys. And I don't know that we're necessarily equipped, but if you've got any other questions, listeners, for us to solve, and you think we did okay, you know, the jury's out on that, then feel free to send them in. show@footballramble.com. Tweet us @footballramble. We love to hear from you. The weirder, the better. I don't know why I've said that.
And if they're about parenting, maybe just wait until Andy's on the show because he's the only parent among us.
He's got a lot of parenting advice.
His two kids are lovely, so he's done a brilliant job there. So I'm sure he is someone you can actually listen to on parenting.
Yeah, that's a good bit of advice. So the Olympics men's final has been decided, everybody. It's going to be Brazil against Spain, which seems like a fitting final for a big tournament, even though, it's sort of slightly crept up on us. Brazil progressed to the third successive Olympics final they've been in. They beat Mexico on penalties in a rematch of the 2012 Olympics final, which actually Mexico won. Mexico, one of their midfielders, though, Uriel Antuna, said penalties are a lottery, which is how they lost. Which, yeah, kind of, guys. But I don't know if you saw the shootout, Jim, or read about it. They were 3-0 down, Mexico, on penalties after five. So they're kind of a lottery.
They're not a lottery. It's amazing that any professional footballer still, like any point in the world, still says that. It's astonishing.
Yeah. And also, Mexico, if they are a lottery, you don't appear to have even bought a ticket there.
You're
very unlikely to win it.
Yeah.
I was reading a really interesting article on, I think it was on ESPN last night, about Brazil and their relationship with Olympic football, which is really fascinating. I think we've covered it on the show in the years gone by, and it was written by Tim Vickery, the excellent Tim Vickery, who's available everywhere. You should definitely check him out when it comes to matters of South American football. He's brilliant. And it was, I think it was understood for a very long time that because Brazil had never won the Olympic gold, that's why they were becoming more and more obsessed with it, because obviously Brazil and football and winning everything is kind of a thing. But then they won gold in 2016, right? And I remember Tim saying that he expected their obsession with it to end and it would focus back more on the World Cup, which they're obviously very well storied in as well. But it actually hasn't. I mean, they if you look at how seriously they're taking this Olympics, they've chosen the full limit of overage players. Whereas you look at, for example, other South American teams have started to use it more as an opportunity to blood young players and use it for development and take into account things, a lot of travel involved and all the rest of it. Brazil are going kind of hell for leather. Like Dani Alves is like leading the charge, like some kind of Spartan,
That's amazing.
At the front of the army. And apparently Dani Alves is part of the reason Dani Alves is well into this Olympics, because he wants to be in the Brazil squad for the World Cup next year.
Yeah.
He's 38. And he plays for Brazil. It's incredible. He's won 43 trophies. It's just great to see.
Isn't he the most decorated player in history?
Yeah, 43 trophies.
Wow. It's astonishing. But I mean, he's been playing in midfield for Brazil, isn't he? It's amazing. The man's an absolute machine, and I love it so much. He looks like a different man now as well.
He looks like a different man all the time because he's so fashionable.
Yeah,
he's
fashion senior.
Yeah, he is. See, yeah, he is. Imagine if he had that on the back of his shirt. He looks great. He just always looks great. You know when men mature with age, right? David Beckham's never looked better. He's just never looked better. And the fact that Danny Alves has maintained his physique, but he also looks rugged and he dresses well and he's obviously got loads of money and he just looks amazing all the time.
Yeah. He's taking me back to the Giroud stuff on Monday.
It's actually a crossroads, isn't it?
I think you need to protect him.
Alves is kind of like, if there was a movie about them both, Alves would be like the bad guy from like the wrong side of the tracks, and Giroud would be like the kind of the good kid, you know?
Yeah, you can tell that they are, because one grooms their eyebrows more than the other, I think.
See, when you're a footballer, I do think there's a lot of time in the afternoons. And when the players are young, obviously on non-match days, when the players are young, they play Call of Duty or they play FIFA or whatever. And when they get a bit older, they really get into personal grooming, a lot of them, and I quite like it.
Yeah, particularly the concert. Absolutely.
That's actually how it's gone for you, Jim, isn't it?
I think
get to a point, don't you, where you reach a certain age and you're at a crossroads, which is you can try and become sort of like one of those men, well groomed, John Hamm figure, or the other option is just a sort of ham figure, just ham.
You can look like a
big glob of ham.
When I got to that crossroads, I didn't have any service on my phone. My sat nav wasn't working, so I didn't know which way to go.
Right.
Quick word on Christian Romero. Spurs have, their offer has been accepted by Atalanta. €50 million plus €5 million add-ons. Barcelona apparently never in the race after all, which kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Given that they don't seem to have any money for anything and they need to get rid of all of their players mainly. I don't know, Jim, to be honest, much about Atalanta, really, apart from that they're wild to watch. And I don't know if that makes me feel that Spurs are going to have a really confident, calm back line as a result of this. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're wild in an attacking sense, aren't they? But they had a very, very good defensive record in the Champions League last season, so, which I know is irrelevant to you. I mean, it's definitely an improvement. It's what Spurs need to be looking at. I don't know if there's any other transfer business knocking around Spurs at the moment. It all seems to have gone a little bit quiet on that front. It's interesting to me how there's talk as well, briefly touching on Barcelona, that they probably won't have Messi registered for the start of the season, which is absolutely astonishing to look at that sort of mess going on there. But yeah, I mean, you've got to be happy with Romero coming in, right? This is a good bit of business, good right age profile coming from a team that have achieved a lot.
Yeah, and have been in the Champions League. Exactly. I think the key point about Romero is mainly just that there was a stated ambition to get it done. He's a big signing and the deal seems to have been done. So I think for Spurs fans, that's probably one of the main things. Spurs, the big news elsewhere in Spurs land is that they've confirmed they've reached an agreement with Celtic for Joe Hart. Oh, Luke, you'll be sad to see him go.
Poor old Joe.
Yeah.
I wish him all the best. I mean, obviously he's not featured an awful lot for Spurs, and I think it's probably on paper it looks like quite a good move for him at this stage in his career. I imagine he'll have a good time up there. On the Romero thing, it's Paratici doing his work, right? Paratici using his connections, getting players in. But sadly, I mean, by the way, Spurs fans will not forgive me if I don't bring this up, Jim. If you're talking about Spurs not worrying about Champions League, I mean, listen, Arsenal aren't worried about any kind of European football this season, so don't worry about it.
Hey, I'm not worried about being a hypocrite, so I'm fine with that.
That's a good point, actually.
It's like a superpower. If you stop caring about being a hypocrite, it's like a superpower, I promise you.
it's one of the side effects for Jim getting the COVID vaccine, actually.
Oh, yeah.
He's not worried about being a hypocrite anymore. But shameless. I just wanted to say...
shameless is what he
is. Sorry to be a complete pain in the ass to Spurs fans, but I mean, ultimately, it's the kind of player they can get, right? He's a no nonsense kind of defender who I mean, that Spurs had a sniff at Jules Koundé, who wouldn't really entertain the idea of going there because he wants to play for a Champions League club. It's clear that Romero is fine to play in the Premier League in London, and Paratici's connections have got the move done. But Spurs aren't fishing in the really hot big pools because they're not in the Champions League. It's as simple as that. So.
I mean, that's with that in mind, though. That's an excellent signing, isn't it?
I think it's probably the best type of sign they could go for. But the worry for me would be that I believe he's played in the three a lot at Atalanta, and I'm hearing and I'm reading that Nuno wants to play the back four for Spurs, and Romero's got to slot in there, and he's also not a left-sided centre back either. So it's quite interesting to see how it all shakes out. But I mean, you know, either way, it's a win-win for me. I don't support Spurs or Arsenal. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. And yeah. Also, I mean,
I don't want to go too wildly into this, but yeah.
But it looks like it's been fairly rapidly moved along. So you've got to imagine that Christian Romero's brother must be quite a good agent.
Yeah.
Just dust it in while the whole Kane thing's going on. Just walking through the room. We've got this one in, cheers. Right, back on with Kane.
And how good is Romelu Lukaku's mother, Adolphine? Apparently she's key in this story about Chelsea going all in for Lukaku. They've had two bids rejected for Romelu Lukaku. The latest was an £85 million offer. Inter apparently happy to take around £100 million. I'm sure they are. But anyway, Adolphine says... Oh, she seems to have played a big role in his arrival and departure at Everton, Jim. This is, listen to your mum, is not always a good piece of advice in football, I would say. Although you're well into old Neymar's dad, aren't you?
Yeah. Neymar's dad is a fascinating man. If you do a bit of reading up on him, he just got everyone eating out of the palm of his hand. It's fascinating stuff. You can hear more about that on the book club show we did with Tarek Pandya, of course. I mean, like... Do you think Lukaku's probably not getting a bit bored of just moving around all the time though?
I don't think that players at the top level should be using family members as advisors. I think it's the most ridiculous thing. I know it's come up kind of specifically this transfer window, but it's absolutely ridiculous. We've had Rabiot's mother kicking off during the Euros.
Yeah.
Lukaku's been advised by his mother. Harry Kane's brother, who to me looks like an absolute clown, and all this other stuff's going on. Now, the point I'm making here is not that you shouldn't pride yourself on speaking to your family or loving or respecting your family. These family members can give you advice anyway. You don't have to make them your official representative. Why not get an agent who actually knows the business? It's a professional business with a lot of money in it, and you might find that things are a little bit easier for you. It happens time and time again. It's absolutely ridiculous to my mind.
Agents are snakes in many cases, Luke. You can see why someone might feel like...
Not necessarily for players, though.
They're
not for players, though, are they? I mean, generally speaking, you talk about if people complain about agents, of course there are some bad ones, but there are some good ones as well. And a lot of the time, it's not really, you don't really hear players moaning about their agents. The players are the ones who have benefited from it a lot of the time. Of course, the agents are as well. My point being, what are the chances then? Let me put it another way. What are the chances then that Harry Kane, for example, who is England captain, the best person in the world to represent him, happens to be his own brother?
That's
the
amazing.
Chances are astronomically
low. What an extraordinary coincidence. That's so
exciting. Exactly. And on the Lukaku thing, I find it interesting, actually, because he said he gave a statement or did an interview, I think, last month saying he's happy where he is. And obviously, Chelsea need a striker. We saw that. We know that anyway, but we saw the chances they missed against Arsenal in that friendly win a while back. But what's happened at Inter is that they need money, that Conte, the manager's left, that apparently Lautaro Martinez, who's his strike partner, is also leaving, has been heavily linked with moves away because they need to raise money and because he's got interest from elsewhere. So it might well be that actually a lot of the reasons that Lukaku wants to stay are actually taken away from him anyway. And so he may move on.
Yeah.
I've heard that Chelsea are after Haaland or Lukaku, and it'll be one of those two. But apparently Dortmund are determined to keep Haaland for another season as well. So
Dortmund's strategy is, in a way, it's similar to Leicester's, isn't it? It's sell a big player every summer, and they've done that with Sancho this year. So, and I think there's a release clause in there with Haaland next summer that would make him a bit more affordable. Still astronomical, but a bit less crazy than it would be this summer. So I think that will wait for then. But let's say Chelsea do get Lukaku. That makes them like a serious, serious challenge for the title, doesn't it? I think they are anyway, because of the improvement they had under Tuchel. And obviously, we're talking about the champions of Europe here. They've got a really, really deep squad. I think they're being forgotten about a little bit because everyone's thinking about what City are going to look like lining up potentially with Kane and with Grealish, and thinking it's like they're just going to steamroller the league, and that it's actually a bit sad for the Premier League because it might just be so much of a one-horse race. But I don't think Chelsea are going to let that be the case, really. There's a hell of a squad there. And the way both of these teams are raising money just by selling off the supposed deadwood is quite amazing, really. It's like, you know how FIFA used to talk about their big pot of cash being a surplus. We've talked for years and years about Chelsea and City stockpiling players, and this is what it's for, isn't it? It's players to sell for a rainy day. so that when things get a little bit tough in something like a global pandemic, you can still still raise funds.
Yeah, well, Victor Moses, Olivier Giroud, Marco van Ginkel all go on, obviously. But there is this interesting point, clearly, if you're trying to buy back a player like Romelu Lukaku, it will raise the spectre of a number of other people that you're letting go, or maybe younger people, perhaps. So Fikayo Tomori is gone and Mark Guay to Palace as well. Tino Livramento joined Southampton on Monday. He is thought to have been one of the academy's best players in recent times. So Chelsea have got a buyback on him, £25 million. But you can see why there might be feelings of like, you know, is this surplus being handled correctly given the money that they're now spending or hoping to spend on Romelu Lukaku, Luke?
Yeah, I think Livramento particularly very, very highly rated. Heard a lot about him, although not seen him play very much. I mean, the idea that Chelsea won't be a contender this season, I think, is fanciful. Come what may. I mean, I think if they pick up a top level striker who's ready to go now in Lukaku, then I think they're a serious, serious contender. And I agree with Jim. I think they are anyway. I think if you look at Man City and Chelsea, you know, Man United have strengthened really well as well. It's going to be a really fiercely competitive top of the table. I mean, it kind of is anyway with the Premier League normally, but you do occasionally see one or two teams run away with it. Very, very hard to predict this season. And I think now that Tuchel's won that big Champions League, of course he came really close before he came to Chelsea, I think that'll give him extra confidence. And the guy is not lacking in confidence anyway. Yeah. I think they'll be a really fascinating prospect this season. They've got everything going for them. Just need to get that final piece in the puzzle, I think, that will sustain them across a long 38 game league season. Like Marcus always says, you know, not always the best team wins the Champions League because you know, lots of different factors, but really the best team does win the Premier League because it's so long and drawn out. And I think Chelsea could do with that top level striker, and they could have done with it for a wee while now. It's funny to me that obviously they had Lukaku before they let him go, but would he have had that development had he not moved on? And if they buy him back, do they care? Probably not, because you know the financial fair play thing's been relaxed. Money's no object to them, really. I hope he does come back to the Premier League because I think he's a great player and I enjoy watching him play.
Yeah, and Thomas, on the subject of squad players as well, Luke, Thomas Tuchel says that Ruben Loftus-Cheek has got the opportunity to prove himself after it looks as though he was going to be offloaded. So, yeah, what a team. Yeah. What a team.
He can prove himself
Chelsea
to me
side.
Anytime.
Hello. He's quite a young man, Luke.
What are you trying to say about me?
This has been quite a pervy episode of The Ramble. I'm not sure.
I've equal opportunities. I love Danny Alves as well, I told you.
Yeah, and if you're enjoying all the perviness, please do get over to Apple Reviews and give us a 5-star if you wouldn't mind. Or wherever you get your pods, it means a lot to us and it will help all the new listeners that we hope to win. Find the show on tomorrow. It is Marcus, Pete and Andy. It's been an absolute delight, guys. Thanks for sharing this, for absolutely necessary contact time with me. Jim, it's been lovely to see your face.
Yeah, yours too.
And likewise, Luke, good to see you.
Yeah, good to see your faces as well. I wish they were Danny Alves's, but we can't have everything. And it's a goodbye from me as well. Thanks very much for listening. See you next time.
That's a great point. We will see you next time. Take care, guys.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.